Welcome to Breaking Form, a podcast of poetry and culture. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I am James Allen Hall. For those listening for the first time,
we do literary games.
We revisit books that we love.
We gossip.
We do. We interview.
We shade.
We laugh.
And we are not for everyone. Mm-mm.
Well, so I have two last ones, and they're both short. And one is Louise. We were talking about how to say her name, and I guess it's Glick. So this was an early poem. I think it was in her first book, and I still have the book, and it's falling apart at the seams. And my mentor showed me this book, and I didn't know her from Adam, Eve, or the snake. But this poem, it had a sort of sexiness that I felt but hadn't had sanctioned by other women poets. So here, it's short. It's called "Here Are My Black Clothes." I think now it is better to love no one than to love you. Here are my black clothes, the tired nightgowns and robes fraying in many places. Why should they hang useless as though I were going naked? You liked me well enough in black. I make you a gift of these objects. You will want to touch them with your mouth, run your fingers through the thin, tender under things, and I will not need them in my new life.
That statement at the end, the king is dead.
The king is dead.
Yep.
Yep. And here, and her blacks crackle and drag, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that, well, first of all, just a woman using a poem to tell a man, I have a new life and it ain't you, you know? And then these black clothes, they're
the man
so
putting it in his mouth. I think the man, you want to put it in your mouth,
gonna
basically.
Wanna, you're going to want to kiss these underpants.
When I'm gone.
When I'm gone, black is your undies.
Oh,
when
what is that odor in the world?
It's and again, she operationalizes coldness. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that move.
And it could be the register of the poem could be so much more like, I'm thinking like Angela Bassett and Waiting to Exhale, throwing all the husband's
shit. It is trash.
It out. But the tone is cool. Yeah, you can't burn trash in this neighborhood. It is trash. But she has that intensity, but it's still cool. Like
it's
all of it is a
cool.
coolness. She it's doesn't let the register. Cool. And don't get me wrong, I love a scene poem too when someone's just like fuck you and tears it down. But I love that she's just letting it go, and then I won't need you in my new life. And you're just like, that new life is just that opening and that ending.
Yes. And I mean, what was her new life? You know?
Well, then she moved to Boston. So
she moved to
Cambridge.
Boston.
Cambridge. The end of that book.
She wrote a bunch of books, And, okay. So my final love for Galentine's Day is, Lucille Clifton. And this, her poem Fury for her mother, where she's remembering her mother burning her own poems because of her father demanding she do. And it ends, she will never recover. Remember, there is nothing you will not bear for this woman's sake. I I thought of your mother, Erin, you know, and all of our mothers who were asked to defer their power and their wound, you know. Mm-hmm. Think of all the poems that went unwritten or burned, you know. So I love that Clifton always sort of remembers those mothers, you know, those who were not, who never had the opportunity to carve a way into being heard. And this last poem I'm going to read, attests to that. It's called Study the Masters. Study the Masters, like my Aunt Timmy. It was her iron, or one like hers, that smoothed the sheets the master poet slept on. Home or hotel, what matters is he lay himself down on her handiwork and dreamed. She dreamed too, words, some Cherokee, some Maasai, and some huge and particular as hope. If you had heard her chanting as she ironed, you would understand form and line and discipline and order and America. It's just, I love her willingness to turn that trope around of the master poet. Mm-hmm. And who are the real masters? The ones ironing the sheets for the masters, right? Mm-hmm. And if you heard her chanting, you'd know everything you need to know about line breaks, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, when I think about, you know, a lot of my book, Modern Poetry, is about my education, you know, and most of my education came from my mother, her diction, you know, wish in one hand, shit in another, right? Mm. Her storytelling, now, if you would ask my mom, do you feel cheated like you missed out because you didn't become a writer or whatever, she would say, hell no. You know, I did what I did.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever felt limited or cheated at all. She would say, I'm probably too lazy to be a poet. She was a teacher, and she did that after my dad died. She went to college and she became a teacher, and it gave her a thing. You know, it gave her a thing because she didn't want to remarry. She didn't want to watch anybody else die. And she taught literature. And kids were her gig, you know, the students were her gig, just like they were my dad. When he was first, he taught industrial arts, and then he was a guidance counselor. That's where I learned to be a poet.
And I'm sure a teacher too.
And a teacher. Yeah. And a therapist. I mean, he was a guidance counselor in, you know, and he loved it. He loved it. That's all he wanted, was to be able to keep doing it. And, mm-hmm. And he was cheated, you know. Yeah. I think he felt a lot more cheated than she did, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like so many poems are ars poeticas. They have a little bit about the writing of the poem inside of it. And it's sort of like, this is the stuff that goes into the poems. If you witnessed her, that is the subject matter too. Those are the things, you know, that's the lived in poem.
Yes.
Whereas people want to say it's these other things, where you have the straight white guy on the internet making these proclamations about poems because no one's reading his anymore.
Yes.
We won't mention him, but unfriend, click.
I'm thinking of, like, here's the poem. Here's your subject. It's a sheet. and your line is the ironing board and your language is the iron, or yeah. I don't know how you ever what you want to put it, right? But like,
yeah.
The idea of like creasing as a line or a line break.
Isn't like, that amazing?
Oh, I'm going to spend the rest of my night thinking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also is geeking out though over like licking asshole as a line break too. Remember when we did the lick my butt?
Uh-huh.
And James is like, now I'm thinking of like licking butt as like line break.
Oh, it. I mean, at some point that line breaks, right? I mean, depending on how, from where to where.
It's going to be a long night.
I love that things James is always transformed and it always comes to, which I love the way you're able to see line being made through so many different lenses. But I love like today it's like the crease sheets and just like three shows ago it was like licking butt.
It's all one big happy thing.
And it was cigarettes once. It was taking a cigarette break. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I really do have a theory that there are endless ways to think about the silence and line break.
Yes.
But James is right. I think about it like too. Like it's always like, well, what's silence? What's the line break? What's all this stuff around it? Is it outer space?
You know, in poetry. What is it? So I chose these people, you know. Because to me, it's the same as learning from the ironing board. It isn't highfalutin, you know. It isn't only certain people can know this or think about this. It's ironing.
Well, Tilly Olson, I stand here ironing.
Oh God, I've been thinking about
that the whole time. Like it's like, you know, that's what she's doing while she's considering her daughter and considering this life and this daughter. It's like so much poems get made when most of us are living our regular lives.
That's right. You know,
that we just have to make that part of it. You know, I wish I don't even know if I do. I mean, some people wish they had all this time to sit around and lounge and think, but it's so much a part of like my actual living.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm getting in the car. Oh, I got to make a note here. And then I got to go do this. And then, oh, maybe I'll get back to it later after I walk the dog, or I'll think about it more when I'm walking the dog, and then packing. And I mean, that's the way most of us, you know, are using it. I think maybe not, I won't say most, but that's the way I do, you know, it's part of the life.
Well, yes. And when you read poems by people who sort of, well, I won't say they don't have to do those things, but their concreteness are other things, you know, depending on their class, you know, and how they live their lives. Everybody has some level of the concrete life they live that is, inhaled into their poems. For us three, it's not the China swan, it's the real swan, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I read you that little new poem with Gwendolyn Brooks?
Okay. Of course.
And also, people who are coming from Frank into modern poetry are going to find new rawness.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're thinking of the line very, very differently than those sonnets.
So much, yes. Yeah.
They're ballads. I mean, there's so many different ballads. There's a light bulb and an asshole.
Yeah,
exactly.
A light bulb and an asshole. And
more self-confrontation, you know, more self. It's. I think of it as a much more painful journey. Again, I hate that word too, but this book is much more painful. Frank still had a levity or, you know, moments. I think this book is harder.
You're also making yourself face. I mean, poetry is such a central force to you. Now you're actually looking at it under a microscope.
Yeah, it's really all pretty much all I've got. So
yeah. Does it stand up if you're going to now push it and look at it? It's a terrifying kind of thing.
It has been. Yes. Keats really helped me. You know, I have his death mask next to me always.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Is that a little lipstick on it? Have you been making out with the death mask a little bit?
I'll never tell.
Another Scorpio.
Black crackle and drag.
You've got Scorpio in your chart. You have to. You're so attracted to Scorps.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Read the poll. Yeah. Sorry. Okay.
So this is a very new sequence of poems, not like nothing I've ever written, and I call them big title poems. So that the titles are in, let's see, 28 point font. And then they go down from, then the actual poem is smaller. So, okay. So here's the title. I almost don't want to mention them lest I break their spell, the wild asters. I almost don't want to mention them lest I break their spell. The wild asters have taken ovaries to a whole new level. Their beveled sepals, thorny petals, like the barbed mop of a precocious tween in the gifted program. Her name, Althea, after that Grateful Dead song. You may be the fate of Ophelia, sleeping and perchance to dream. The asters' voices, they only orate at night under stars painted by a middle-aged what's-her-name from the Middle Ages. Remind me of what Gwendolyn Brooks called the voices of my dim killed children in her poem, The Mother. She read it in a gymnasium somewhere in Michigan in early fall. Brooks told us her throat was sore and announced she'd be drinking warm pineapple juice to ease her pain. I could see its pollen color through the transparent stein she sipped from, a habit I have since adopted, though it burns to swallow. Wild asters adorned Gwendolyn's frock and the scarf she tied over her hair, and asters swayed in the dark at the border of the gymnasium. The stars that night were painted as if a cheap watercolor brush had been used like an ice pick in a stabbing motion by some Althea, some unbaptized bookworm.
I love the asters in that poem. I mean, asters are such beautiful, beautiful flowers, but like, I just love the asters in the poem becoming like, you know, ornament and also just like real in the world. It's just like the china and the real swan, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. On her dress and in the sky and in her hair and along the edge of the, you know, hip gymnasium, you know. Right.
And then the pineapple juice, like for a sore throat. Yeah, yeah, I was thinking that must have burned, but
that must have burned. Yeah. And then this girl who's sort of showing up in my poems, this Althea, who is sort of this little unbaptized bookworm, you know, this little trickster sprite. I'm not sure where she'll go, but she has me right now.
There's something too about it was the gymnasium. Like, I just feel like any of us who grew up in the country and everything happens in the gymnasium, you know, that's where the reading's going to be. That's where the sports are going to be. The graduation's going to be, the dance, you know, there was something about that, that just really, there's something in your poems that speaks to me. When I listened to your Poetry Off the Shelf interview, it was like emotional for me. Like when I don't know, just the way you were talking and it's like letting, you know, your life runs alongside the work that you're doing. And some people are like, you know, some people are so set, like, no, like the poem's not me, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand needing some of that freedom from complete autobiography. But I don't know. It's just so reassuring to me and emotional, like to the motivations of where you, why you do it, where you came from. I think it speaks to so many of us who also find it important and not just another thing that we do or a hobby. It's something that's been essential.
It's everything. I mean, yeah. You know, some people say God, some people say poetry, you know. Mm-hmm.
When I would go with my brother to NA meetings, and we, you know, go around and talk about our higher power, poetry was my higher power. Yeah. It was the thing that I could turn to figure things out. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Or turn things over to, like, all right, I'll give it to a poem. I can't control this.
It's a word for a process. It's not just an inert thing. You know, once it's written, there it is, it's dead until we bring it back alive by reading it. But it's a process that is so human and, you know, we all know it and we all know it intimately and privately, you know.
I told James once, I'm like, I can't tell you that I can tell poetry, but I can't tell you that. And it's like, I feel so much more comfortable telling poetry something than I do a friend sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, I remember somebody in a Al-Anon saying, oh, you know, God can take it. God can take your anger. God can take it, you know.
And the poem can too.
And the poem can too.
What a fun episode, Aaron Smith. Welcome to the Fact Check.
I love these. They made me feel inspired. They made me just feel like I wanted to geek out about poetry and think about it. So, and I need that a lot lately, I feel like. So I was really happy to have this conversation.
And I think people are still reeling from the death of Louise Glick. It was a very sudden thing. Sure. So I'm glad that we got to talk about a really early poem from Firstborn, which was published just when Louise was 25 years old.
Wow. And I do think, everyone, that we will do a Louise Glick tribute episode ourselves, because you know how much we love her here, but it just hasn't been the right time yet.
It's true. And her name, Louise, means fierce warrior.
Hmm. And what was her sign? That. Was she a Taurus?
She was a Taurus. Yeah. I think April 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah. That's crazy that I know that, but I do know that.
Everyone knows you're crazy about Zodiac.
It's weird. So, yeah, it's a little weird. Joey Graham's right around there, too. She's also a Taurus. So anyway, we'll have lots in the show notes, lots of links to stuff that is lots of links to Louise Glick and to Lucille Clifton's work. And Lucille, of course, means light, right?
And I think Diane has agreed, well, I know she has, to come on and record some episodes called Good Dickinson and talk about Emily Dickinson with us, which, if you've listened to the episode where she does, last year's Valentine's Day episode, the 2023 one, it's fantastic. We think we'll have some more Di Seuss on here for you all in the future. Yeah,
we'll get some Dick in Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And in the show notes, I just have to mention this.
For Easter.
I mean, he has risen. That's right. Roll away the stone. God, anytime I go to Indiana, it's like he has risen in like red drippy letters. Like it looks like someone's menstrual blood.
Nashville is just always full of like, you killed a baby, you're going to hell, or like hell is real. Yeah.
I know I get close to my parents' house because there's a sign that says how many abortions there have been this year.
Is it a digital like ongoing sign?
No, it's analog.
It's someone analog. Just crawls up there. God, crawl up the sign and put another number on.
We talked about Keats's death mask. Di says that she has it like near her in her house. And so I found a really fascinating article about the death masks that were made. I mean, there are molds of his face on his deathbed. Mm-hmm. There were two of them made and neither one exists, but the copies of those death masks do and sell for a lot of money. And lots of writers have actually owned these copies the ones that are really, really expensive too. Yeah. So anyway, there's a fascinating article about that in the show notes.
Nice.
Which I spend a lot. I spend too much time doing, I guess, but I really love these little nuggets.
I tell people that if you, you know, do yourself a favor and go in, because you do such beautiful show notes.
I think I'm just going to start posting pictures, like whole pics there.
And we're happy to announce our OnlyFans.
Can you imagine?
Oh God, no.
Oh my God. I don't see how these like folks like take like these, like, you know, I mean, listen, all power to you and your nudity. Like, good for you. I love that you want to be naked on your social media, but like, you're a teacher. Like, I just can't. That's where I just get prudish, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want my students to ever see me in that regard.
Like, oh, Dr. Hall, you shaved this week. All right, girl, bye. This really devolved. Well, it's breaking for me. Hey, everyone. If you enjoyed today's Breaking Form, review us with 5 stars on Apple. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Breaking Form Pod. And we'd love it if you'd support us by buying our books. Links are in the show notes. And remember, we're not for everyone.
It's gonna be a long night.